Maybe we should quickly go around and everyone just say their name for the recording. So this is Ellie in San Francisco.
This is Carrie in San Francisco.
Holden in San Francisco.
Tom in San Francisco.
Sean in San Francisco.
Rob in Palo Alto.
Bill in Missouri.
Bridget in D.C.
And Tim in Westchester, Pennsylvania.
And Natalie in Oklahoma.
Nice. We are all over the map here. This is great. So thanks. I guess the first thing we wanted to get started with was just some of the sort of very basic things we need to vote on. So one amendment in particular that we wanted to make was right now we need treasurer and chairman approval for expenses over $5,000, and we wanted to raise that. We wanted to, I guess, take what was the amendment to take that away and.
We wanted to raise it to 25, or no, we wanted to...
Change it. So but we need board approval. Well, yeah. So what we've needed so far is treasurer and chairman approval for anything over $5,000, but under $25,000. Yeah. Anything over $25,000 needs the whole board approval. And we just want to raise that from... We want to get rid of the specific approval from the treasurer and the chairman. And so to have up to $25,000, Holden and I have discretion to spend, and then over $25,000, we would still need board approval.
And, I mean, the justification here is just that, like, our budget's bigger, we have more staff, there are more expenses where we have to make the call, and it covers, you know, sort of like a bunch of people or a bigger operation, and so we just think a bigger number makes sense.
Yeah, but this is Rob here. This is, I think, a standard board arrangement in order to ward against fraud. So given the growth of the organization, it sounds like an obvious thing. So long as the bylaws continue to stipulate that over $25,000, you need some approval from the board.
Yeah.
Approved.
Cool.
This is Phil. I approve.
I approve. This is Bridget.
Tom approves.
Carrie approves.
Well, I mean, I approve.
Yeah, Ellie approves too.
Okay, is that everyone?
I think so.
Tim approves.
Oh.
He's always laughing. All right, well, the next item is, I guess, annually we need to elect. We have to have a board member election, and so we'd like to just re-elect all the current members of the board. So just everyone can just email their votes to Holden, who's the board secretary, and if you want, you can just, we can discuss if anyone would like, but you can also just email Holden saying that you vote to re-elect all current
board
members.
I think
we
should first just, like, ask, does anyone have questions or issues or want to discuss anything, and then if not, we'll take, like, a minute to let people email.
Can I ask one question as one of the newer board members? Is there any bylaw provision for terms of service on the board, rotation of board chair and treasurer, authority to create subcommittees, that sort of thing?
We can create subcommittees. We are supposed to, like, terms I think are supposed to be, like, 3 years at most. We just, like, do an annual election because that's easy and... That way we're able to revisit it. 3 years with re-election. So in other words, you can be elected to as many terms as you want. There's no stipulation people have to leave after 3 years. And that's why we just figure we vote every year, and then we figure we're in good shape.
And then what about rotation, if any, of the board president or chair plus treasurer?
There's no provision that requires that. I'm open to discussing it. I'm not aware of, like, a particular reason we need to do that, but...
I don't think there's any necessary reason to have a requirement of a rotation. I'm just procedurally, if it were to change, is it all informal, or is there some bylaw specification of the process?
I think... It's just an act of the board that would change the positions. We've done it before. I mean, we've changed who has what positions by an act of the board. So I'm pretty sure. I mean, I could, like, review the bylaws right now if you want, but I'm fairly sure that's, like, how it works. Which means we can change offices if we want. We just don't see a need to do that now, and we're asking people to vote for the offices as they are.
Yep. Okay.
Any other questions before we have a vote? All right, so why don't we give people, like, 1 minute to email their votes to me. I'm holding at kimball.org.
And we're just, as a group, re-electing ourselves.
I mean, yeah, I mean, we're basically proposing that we re-elect the board as is, and you can vote, like, yeah. I approve, like, the proposal, and if you have an issue, just, we'll preferably bring it up verbally, but if not, then you can vote for something else. Oh, I got a bunch of email. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm 7. So.
Well, that's good enough.
Yeah, okay.
So then we also, I guess, we have a provision in our bylaws to review these other items that I sent over email, the mission and our mission and vision statement. The roster of directors that we just reelected, review of our insurance coverage and the compensation arrangement. Did anyone have any questions about any of these? We don't need to vote. We just need to have reviewed them.
My only this is Phil. My quick comment, and it's probably getting too nitpicky with the mission statement, but there is within there. It talks about. Finding, giving opportunities, and publishing the details of the analysis, possibly something about, you know, there's also been a lot of direct and indirect giving and granting from GiveWell, and there may be some or more in the future. So something to consider, but not a priority, that maybe the actual granting process might somehow be mentioned in the mission. But it's probably covered as is. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the mission statement is, like, currently a statement of our overall driving mission. I mean, there's some stuff we do that's, like, obviously related to it and makes sense and isn't, like, you know, that exact service. So I think it's okay as long as it's not, like, the main thing we're doing. I think at the point where, you know, most of GiveWell's impact is coming from direct grants or a lot of it is, I suppose we could amend the statement. It doesn't... I mean, it's also just, like, I think it's... The mission statement, I don't think, is any kind of, like, I don't think it has, like, major legal significance. I think it's basically a way for us to be on the same page about what we're about, and I think it does a pretty good job of that. We use it a lot. I mean, we send it... It's always, like, how we describe GiveWell when we're going to describe it in some kind of written setting, and so I think it works pretty well for that, and don't really want it to get more complicated. But.
Yeah.
I don't know if we want to spend a lot of...
That all sounds good to me. This is Rob here, and just one more small nitpicky thing. It's not one of the items to review, but I just wanted to ask about whether or not there are plans in place for an audit this year, and if it's the same outfit that did it last year.
Yeah, we do an audit every year with the same outfit.
Uh-huh. Has it been the same company that's done the audit since you guys were in existence?
Yeah. Fructer Rosen.
My understanding from other boards I've served on is that it's best practice, you know, every 3 or 5 years to change companies.
Hmm.
Whether or not it's best time to do that now, I have no idea, but just to flag something then for the future.
Huh. Why would that be? I think that's something that would be pretty non-trivial for us, because we like this auditor in terms of, like, you know, we feel like we know where we stand with them and we communicate well and we know when things are going to happen and we think they do a pretty decent job and I don't know. I think it would be like an undertaking to get a new auditor. So I think we wouldn't do that unless we felt it was had a lot of value. It's not really clear to me what that value would be, but I don't know. Do you have, like, further reading on that, or maybe we should take this offline?
Yeah, we can deal with it offline. Not important enough for everyone now, unless other people have views about it.
Okay, I'll note that we should deal with it offline.
Briefly, this is Phil. I would echo, I believe it was Rob's comment. It's been my understanding, and I'm not far from an expert in this, that something similar to that basically rotation of auditors on a periodic basis is a good idea. And the rationale for it, I would think, would be sort of twofold. One, in case the current auditor's making any mistakes or in case you get new ideas from a new auditor, or, you know, second, just kind of a level of transparency. I mean, if you want to think about, like, say you know, a worst case scenario, a Bernie Madoff scenario, where you've got an auditor that is probably somewhere on the spectrum from bad to criminal. Switching auditors from time to time to somebody new is more transparent in that respect. Not a huge issue necessarily, but I think I've heard similar things to what Rob said. I don't know.
Is there a distinction between smaller, less complex, and larger, more complex organizations with that issue?
Yeah, I mean, in my sense is that's right. I mean, the smaller, less complex doesn't require as much bureaucracy and formality. But GiveWell's getting bigger, not smaller, and given the GiveWell Labs and connection to Good Ventures, there's already, you know, a modest amount of complexity. So again, we can take it offline. Is that not? I'm just conveying my sense of best practices from other places, not trying to insist upon a point of principle here.
Sure. Okay. Thanks.
Okay, can I just go back to the mission statement really quickly? I don't know if we want to go through this in detail now either, but the definition of giving opportunities, I mean, that was explicitly changed, I don't know, a year or two ago, I guess.
Yeah.
And it seems as though the broadening of that has resulted in some sort of incremental changes in terms of the research coverage, but I think that's what is a giving opportunity, what isn't a giving opportunity? I think that's something that would be helpful to discuss and clarify at some point. How does that sort of orient GiveWell's work in a way that wouldn't have been previously?
I mean, the idea behind that change was that we went from thinking about the unit of investigation as like a charity in the way that we would think about a charitable organization you make a donation to anything that could be an opportunity for philanthropy, even if it wasn't itself a charity.
So it wouldn't include like an impact investment, or it wouldn't include something, or a public-private partnership or something.
I think it could. I think that what you're doing is, I mean, it's giving, and I think the way I would roughly define giving is that you're spending money in the hopes of achieving a social outcome rather than, you know, merely for the purpose of making a profit. So to the extent that, you know, you have some expected profit, but it's not as high as it would be, and therefore in some expected sense you're spending money in the hopes of a social outcome. I mean, I think that's covered under our mission. I mean, how we actually feel about those opportunities is a separate question, but I think we're looking for ways to basically reduce one's own bank account in order to make the world a better place. And I think, you know, impact investing counts. Certainly public-private partnerships count, I think. Like that, you know, that's the sort of thing that that sounds just like straight-up giving to me. I mean, depending on exactly what they mean, but sometimes public-private partnerships are just like giving money to a company in order to give it an incentive to do more socially valuable things.
Do you know whether there's any, whether you get into any complications if you were to, like, recommend, like, people give to, like, a political campaign or a ballot initiative? And is that, like, something, I mean, it's not something you're doing right now or, like, plan to do in the foreseeable future, but it's just something I'm wondering about.
Well, I think it is definitely relevant. I mean, we're doing politics right now, and I think I would call it a giving opportunity. I mean, I think it's also the case that there would be legal issues with our doing that, and so we would just have to comply with the law there. I don't think our mission statement needs to specify, like, that we comply with the law, or to, like, draw the distinctions that say we comply with the law. Like, you know, another giving opportunity would be, like, I don't know, like, supporting some kind of organization that is illegal to support. We're not going to do that because it's illegal. But, you know, I don't think that needs to be specified in the mission statement. But, I mean, that definitely affects us. I mean, like, I think the question about ballot initiatives, like, that's not something that's out of the question for us to do in some kind of foreseeable future. And if we did it, we would have to be mindful of the legal issues, because there are legal issues.
Cool. So I guess we'll move on unless anyone has any other questions on these items. So the next item is just a general check-in on the GiveWell Good Ventures relationship. Obviously, our relationship with Good Ventures is important to us, and we had put a marker down to check in at least once a year at board meetings on how that relationship was going. So do one of you guys want to...
Do we want Carrie to leave the room for part or all of this? I think at least for part of it she should. I think we agreed on doing that, yeah.
Sure, should I leave now? Or...
Does anyone want to do part of this with Carrie here, or should Carrie just leave?
I mean, I think it'd be useful to hear Carrie's perspective.
Cool.
Yeah, I agree. We have to hear what Carrie has to say.
Okay.
Okay.
So
well,
she can leave, but then we all have to leave too. So.
Do you want to start, and then I'll like fill in?
Sure.
The gaps.
Yeah, I mean, I think the relationship is very good. I think we're working together well. We are, I think, as we've said over email, we're about to launch the Open Philanthropy Project, which is basically a renaming of GiveWell Labs, but it's a renaming largely for the purpose of making clear that it's an equal partnership between GiveWell and Good Ventures. We have, you know, a good chunk of our staff priority is basically the Open Philanthropy Project. And so the relationship is, you know, definitely a close one. And I think it basically looks like we anticipated it would a while ago, which is that we coordinate a lot. We work together. We, you know, sort of behave like one team a lot of the time. At the same time, we have different resources. We haven't had any issues come up around, like, you know, who's in charge of what. I don't think there's any confusion around who's in charge of what. Everything is either paid for by Good Ventures, in which case it belongs to Good Ventures. That would be like the rent. Or it's paid for by GiveWell, sometimes using funds that are earmarked by Good Ventures. But if that's the case, then it belongs to GiveWell. That's most of GiveWell staff, or that's all of GiveWell staff. I think there hasn't been, you know, when we talk about a grant, it's Good Ventures' ultimate decision if Good Ventures wants to make a grant. If Good Ventures didn't, theoretically, we could go to other donors. I think that's something we would obviously like. That would be a conversation that hasn't happened yet. So I haven't really seen any issues come up, and I think it's a good relationship, and it's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty closely coordinated relationship. Does that all sound right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, I would just add or clarify that. And the board knows this because they saw the blog post that's going out with the Open Philanthropy Project website. But renaming is both for the purpose of making it clear that this is an equal partnership, but also the first step in potentially separating the brands of GiveWell and the Open Philanthropy Project because they're such different things. And it, I think, will help prevent donor confusion between the very different things that the two missions or brands are pursuing.
Yeah, that's
I guess
right.
It's the same mission, but and I would just say that I really enjoy working with GiveWell. I think I've said this before, but the way I like to think about it, you know, I'm working with the handful of GiveWell staff who are, you know, working full-time on the Open Philanthropy Project to research potential focus areas. And I'm doing this in lieu of hiring a separate staff at Good Ventures. And the reason is that I feel like we could hire a separate staff to do this for me and Dustin, or we could help to support and empower this highly aligned, highly capable, highly motivated, independent organization to pursue this work, not only for us, but for the thousands of donors around the world who care about GiveWell's recommendations and follow GiveWell's recommendations. And the second one just seems easily more exciting to me. I feel great about, you know, being able to help GiveWell, you know, build their capacity and take on new challenges. And I think it's going really well. And I think Holden's been an excellent manager of the OPP team. If you have any specific questions for me, I'm happy to answer them, or I'm happy to leave the room and let you talk about me.
Cool. Thanks, Carrie.
This is Phil. I had a couple questions. I guess mainly for Carrie. I think you sort of touched on this, but in what you said, but just to ask more explicitly. 2 points. One, how much staff does Good Ventures have now that's sort of, you know, on the research angle? And two, how much, if any, is basically all of Good Ventures grant-making towards GiveWell or towards the recommendations that are either produced by GiveWell or produced in partnership with GiveWell? Is the money sort of flowing? Are there other grants and other charities that you're looking at besides the ones that GiveWell recommends? I guess so. Those are the two questions.
Sure, no problem.
What does staff look like, and how much, you know, is there GiveWell versus is there anything that's outside of the scope of GiveWell and OPP that you guys are involved in?
Sure, no problem. So there, I don't have any staff on the research side. I do some research work, but I'm not staff anymore since my husband and I got married. So. No staff on the research side. And on the grant side, the Open Philanthropy Project is the primary input into our grant decisions. We have made a handful of grants outside of the joint agenda between GiveWell and Good Ventures. So it's not exclusively GiveWell recommended grants, but the majority is GiveWell recommended grants, and I expect that, or we say it with, what we say on the website rather than recommended is with GiveWell's input. So the majority of the grants we're making are with GiveWell's input, and we expect that to be the case going forward and for the foreseeable future. And if you'd like to take a look at the grants we've made, goodventures.org has a grants database that has like a spreadsheet with all of the grants we've made and the amounts and the dates and the categories, you know, policy, meta research, et cetera.
Okay, thanks. That answers my questions. Thank you.
This is Bridget. Carrie, I have a question about, I know you're sort of operating at a different level of philanthropy and meeting many other philanthropists at that level. And is the partnership with GiveWell something that you talk about that would be sort of projected to these other folks that might be making a big impact in these areas?
Absolutely. I talk about GiveWell pretty much all the time because GiveWell is, I mean, our main partner, and, you know, we're working with GiveWell in lieu of hiring our own staff. And I think that's really unique, and I think GiveWell is really special. It's in its kind of philosophy and particularly its commitment to transparency. I talk a lot about that, about our commitment to transparency and how we've been inspired by GiveWell on that front. Because I feel like that's one of the ways that we'll have an impact on the culture of philanthropy is by setting an example in terms of, you know, how transparent a foundation can be and how to deal with the very kind of legitimate obstacles for foundations to be more transparent. And so, yes, I talk about GiveWell a lot, talk about GiveWell's traditional recommendations, and also talk about the research that we're doing together, because we ultimately hope that in the areas we choose to focus on, like criminal justice reform, for instance, is an area that we've been doing a lot of research in on the U.S. policy side. You know, we hope that Good Ventures won't be the only audience for that research, that, you know, other donors who have an interest in that area and are compelled by our reasoning for working on it will also, you know, join us in supporting work in that area, and maybe even existing foundations who have an existing interest in criminal justice, for instance, would join us in, you know, doing that work so that we're able to, you know, have a bigger impact than we would be able to on our own. So pretty much all I talk about, actually, with other people, but is there any specific reason you were asking?
Well, just when I think about GiveWell's impact, it obviously it's reaching many donors like me who are below $5,000, but when it reaches a small number of donors who are operating at a much higher level, then it can have an even bigger impact.
Mm-hmm.
So I just feel like when it comes to impact analysis, looking at kind of the pyramid of exposure that it's getting is one thing that, at least one thing that I think this partnership is very beneficial for people.
What would be your next best option to play the role that GiveWell is playing now? just hire staff and...
I just hire staff, I think. I haven't come across any other organization that's quite like GiveWell.
Cool.
So I should head outside? Okay. You want to Slack me when you want me back?
Yeah, sure. Or we'll just come get you if you don't go too far.
Sure. I'll just sit out there on the couches.
Okay, cool. Should we stop the recording?
Yeah.
I guess we should.
Yeah.
We'll pause the recording.
I always forget. Do you hit pause in it? If you hit the record button again.
Are we still partners?
As far as I know. All right. So let's go through the questions. What was Phil's question?
Okay, so the three questions I have down in order, Tom was just like making a statement, but I think it's something we wanted to respond to about like the budget and how, you know, Good Ventures is a significant part of our budget and how our budget sort of assumes continued relationship with Good Ventures. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, and I guess maybe the questions for you guys would be, is there anything on the horizon that could potentially change that? And Carrie, do you understand that it's pretty important for GiveWell's fortunes that if you plan on doing something different, they need some advance notice?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think this is something they've thought a lot about, and in the course of their fundraising have, you know, really gone out of their way to make sure that in the unlikely and unforeseeable event that, you know, we go our separate ways, that GiveWell isn't up a creek without a paddle, but there is absolutely, you know, no reason I can see why we wouldn't continue to work closely together, and if there were, I would let you know as soon as possible.
Can I just ask about OPP specifically?
Yeah.
It's the two organizations that are sort of the co-sponsors or co-owners of that. It's not individuals, right? It's GiveWell and Good Ventures that are co-sponsors of OPP.
Yeah. I was going to mention, so A, on the budget. I mean, A, I don't think we're all that vulnerable on the budget. We've taken great pains not to be all that vulnerable on the budget. So, you know, we've limited the amount of direct support, unrestricted support we get from Good Ventures. We have this separate account that's like we're very explicit about there's certain things we would just stop doing if Good Ventures and we went our separate ways. But, you know, we've made sure those are things we can stop doing without like too much turmoil. And, you know, there are things like side research projects that are like cool and that are informative, but that GiveWell doesn't like fall apart if they stop. You know, we don't have, I mean, we've been very deliberate about like what expenses are and aren't. And then when it comes to the stuff that we don't want to lose, we do take support from Good Ventures for that. But it's limited to like 20%. And when we look at the numbers, we say, what would happen if we went our separate ways? I think we would say, well, we would have a challenge. We would have to raise some more money. But it's not like we would collapse. I mean, we would basically, I think, have a challenging but reasonable and realistic fundraising task ahead of us and like an ample, not excessive, but ample amount of time to do it. So I don't think we're like that super vulnerable. You know, I do agree that we do things with the assumption that we are going to be working with Good Ventures. I think that's reasonable. I think we don't do anything that would be like a disaster or a catastrophe to do if we ended up going our separate ways. Another thing I'd say, so, you know, this is also on the topic of partners, because they asked me about like recruiting more partners while you're out of the room, and I took that one while you're out of the room. I think you know the answer. You know, another thing I would say is that like it's also the case that having Good Ventures is like very important in a very practical way to us in terms of like being able to get the information we need and being able to like get the connections we need. And I think like if we went our separate ways, I can think of at least one and like maybe two donors who I think would like seriously consider stepping in to fill that role. But it's like, why do that with things as they are? And so I don't know that they would. I don't know it would go as well. But it's also, you know, I think it's not quite the case that there's like absolutely no prospects other than Good Ventures. I would say there's a lack of desire to kind of urgently ask more people to become the kind of partner that Good Ventures is, because that kind of partnership has a lot of costs, and it's kind of like good to have one of them, and not more.
Although the question of when and how to, you know, try to bring in additional partners is one that we're actively thinking about, and we do understand the importance of, you know, for our ability to work with other partners over the long term to get, you know, people in on the ground floor and feeling like a part of our effort. And so, you know, we're thinking hard about when and how to do that. And we'll probably have more updates for you at future board meetings.
Yeah. Though, so what I said while you're out of the room is that the main way we're thinking about that right now is like general outreach and generally getting to know people who mm-hmm. might be important down the line mm-hmm. without like a real sense of urgency about it, partly because we think it'll go better when our product is better,
mm-hmm.
And partly because I feel like there is something a little unique about like where, like, not only Good Ventures values, but also Good Ventures size and like Good Ventures stage of development, where it's like, you know, not everyone is in that like time, it's the best possible time until you get to know them.
Mm-hmm.
This is Tim. I'm the one who asked the partnership question. I would just that the motivation for that question is not another partner like Good Ventures, but another partner at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think if the barrier is, you know, who would we want to be like Good Ventures is one that prevents doing anything, and the urgency for recruiting at least new partners at some level simply to keep that option open, I think is fairly high.
So,
you know, that means like co-investments and, you know, just other examples of ways that GiveWell would work in the Open Philanthropy Project with other partners so that it really is perceived as a partnership, not a, this is a Good Ventures and there's just not that much distinction. And I really do believe that process will get harder and harder over time if there isn't somebody involved.
So, I mean, we have, you know, we have our network of donors. Some of them are big donors. Some of them are interested in GiveWell Labs and would fund something if, you know, we thought it was necessary. We haven't, like, I think it would be kind of complicated and distracting to say, we're going to do this grant. Now let's see who else we can pull into the grant. I think we would need a case to them for why it was good for them to do this and why it shouldn't just be funded by Good Ventures when the amounts of money are, like, still relatively small right now. So I think we haven't chosen to go that road. I think, you know, I could be convinced that the benefits would outweigh the cost, but that's, like, sort of not how I feel right now.
And I would add that, like, our work is just, it's still quite exploratory and quite preliminary, and I think once we have committed to focus areas, it may make more sense to, you know, recruit more funding partners. Because it may be the case that, like, some people are more interested in U.S. policy, and while some other people are more interested in or compelled by our arguments for working on global catastrophic risks. And I can see also once we have kind of a better sense of how much funding we expect to allocate in those areas, that it makes it easier to, like, have a conversation with people about where it might make sense for them to come in. Right now, it's just a relatively small number of grants. They're very focused on helping us learn. You know, they're somewhat, like I said, exploratory, and I think that just makes it hard right now to solicit more partners, but it's something that we are thinking really hard about. Does that make sense, Tim?
Yeah.
Phil, what was the question that you asked when Carrie was out of the room?
Basically, sort of in the same vein, sort of asking how things have been going in terms of what does the pipeline look like and has it improved, if at all, in terms of making contacts with, connections with, and ultimately sort of bringing into the fold or at least getting folks to follow other large donors, particularly in the Silicon Valley area, but in general, basically. Do you have any other kind of
yeah.
whales, as it were, that might be on the horizon as far as donors?
I think it is beneficial to be here. I wouldn't say the returns are huge right now. I think we're, like, I mean, I don't think, is there anyone else on the horizon that's, like, the size of Good Ventures, really? Not really.
That's not, like, a really, I mean, there just aren't that many people
right.
at our size, so
right.
that doesn't seem like the best.
Some, I mean, we've met, like, we have a few donors who are, like, few. I'm trying to think. Like a couple donors who are among our like bigger supporters of top charities who are based in the Silicon Valley area, and you know, there's a lot of companies in the area that we're going to be able to like give a talk at, but we don't. Those are like the two main things going on from being in Silicon Valley. Aside from the general project Holden mentioned earlier of, you know, being out there strategizing about whom we might be able to meet and then trying to meet more with them.
We do have the occasional like rethink of like what else could we be doing to, you know, to meet more people here, to you know, to do that. You know, I think it's not our top thing right now because we just feel like, as with Kimball One, like our product is going to be more compelling in the future. We also feel like in a lot of cases our timing like will maybe be a little better in the future as people get more into philanthropy. Our top priority is really having great research, but we do talk about this once in a while. You know, the thing we kind of came up with last time was doing more speaking at companies. I mean, we've done a little bit of that. And you know, we're thinking about, okay, maybe we should do that more because there's a lot of companies with people who are going to be pretty wealthy who are like really convenient to our office and we could go speak at them. And so that's probably something we should be doing more. And that's like an example of like a little thing that we do. And then there's just like generally, you know, being out here. I mean, we do have the occasional meeting with someone. We do meet some of these people, get into the networks a little bit, but it's kind of a subtle long-term thing at this time.
And something else we're doing that's relatively small to, like, lay the groundwork is, you know, as far as the output and research of the Open Philanthropy Project, having occasional meetings. We're going to have our second one this week on the topics that we're researching to tell other people who are in the area and interested in, we think, you know, have an above average interest in the particular topic, to just walk them through what we've done from a research perspective and what we're funding and why, and you know, if there were really compelling things that had additional room for more funding, like tell them about those giving opportunities. But just as a way to get, you know, people we know who are interested in giving and interested in the kind of giving opportunities that the Open Philanthropy Project is likely to uncover, to just bring them into the office and let them talk to, you know, let them hear a little bit about what we've done, ask questions, and actually talk to the GiveWell staff who are, you know, really taking point on those investigations.
It sounds like those are relatively sort of elite groups, but if you guys are doing, you know, anything like the research meetings, and I guess you guys did do one in San Francisco, right?
Yeah, we do research meetings in San Francisco all the time now. I mean, we do one in New York, one in San Francisco.
Will you just let the board know? Because, I mean, we may have people who would be interested and could potentially be supporters, so.
Sure.
And at some point, it may make sense to do separate research meetings for GiveWell and the Open Philanthropy Project because, they are such different approaches and, I think, potentially draw a different kind of audience.
Yeah.
And, you know, hard to cover it all in one meeting, frankly, because there is so much that we're doing. So
I mean, we've also just thought about, like, a beginner and an advanced research meeting. I think somehow splitting them up and doing, like, more than one at the same time seems like a good idea. I'm not sure exactly what the right split is. Because there actually is a decent amount of overlap and interest between the two sides of what we're doing, but I could see it going either way.
Can I ask a clarifying point about the difference in Good Venture support for stuff that's traditional GiveWell and stuff that's Open Philanthropy partnership? And is there a break in some of the, you know, some support is for GiveWell proper and some support is for the Open Philanthropy Project? And, you know, where do things like the Give Directly match fall into all of this conversation?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it actually reminds me of something I wanted to mention earlier, which is there are at least four different ways in which we support GiveWell through our grant making. One is unrestricted support to GiveWell, which is about 20% of GiveWell's unrestricted budget. One is grants to GiveWell's top charities, which is unrestricted support to those organizations, but helps GiveWell by, you know, increasing its money moved and raising GiveWell's profile, and that's where the GiveDirectly match from last year would fall. We also actually have some grants that are meant to help create, in one case, an incentive for organizations to go through GiveWell's process, and in another case, help to kind of seed new charities that could become GiveWell recommended charities down the road. So, for example, we gave GiveWell a grant this year of, I think it was $500,000 for incentive grants to potential top charities, which means that if a charity were to kind of go through the first phase of GiveWell's process, you know, allow GiveWell to publish a write-up on that phase and kind of, you know, be strong enough on GiveWell's criteria to, you know, enter a second, more intensive phase of evaluation, they would get a $100,000 grant at that stage, just in order to make it less of a kind of all or nothing deal for these charities, because, you know, before then, it was the case that you could spend a ton of time with GiveWell and ultimately not be recommended in the end, you know, if things didn't go, you know, if you didn't stack up.
You wouldn't place your show, basically.
Right, yeah, and, you know, it's a big risk, I think, for an organization, because it's a lot of time that organizations invest in the GiveWell evaluation process, and so having that incentive grant, you know, we hope is going to make it easier for groups to participate and want to participate. And so GiveWell's, I think, given one of those incentive grants so far. Is that right?
We're planning to give one so far.
And then in terms of seeding new organizations, we made a grant with GiveWell's input to an organization called New Incentives, which does a conditional cash transfer program. It's very small, it's very new, and the grant was meant to help them get off the ground, do their first evaluation in the hopes that maybe someday they might be a viable candidate for GiveWell's traditional top charities process. And we also made a grant to Evidence Action, which is a charity that houses the Deworm the World program, which is one of GiveWell's recommended programs, to help them basically research other interventions that they might, you know, then decide to scale up in the hopes that one of those things could become another GiveWell top charity. So that is another way in which we support GiveWell's traditional work. And then the last way is by giving to GiveWell in a way that's earmarked for research related to the Open Philanthropy Project.
Right, so those grants cover the types of things Holden mentioned before, which are research that is important, but if we were to, and if our relationship ended with Good Ventures, that we would end supporting those activities, as opposed to there's a lot of Good Ventures general operating support that funds GiveWell staff, and the GiveWell staff are flexibly allocated between our traditional research and Open Philanthropy Project research.
There was one more question that was asked while Carrie was out. Could I move to that one?
Yeah, though maybe it makes sense. So that was the question about fundraising. Maybe we should just talk about the fundraising in general, and because I think that fits well with that topic.
Sure.
So we were going to just talk about the budget and fundraising needs. I mean, very, very simply put, our staff size has grown a lot, and that has driven our budget to grow. We have had reasonable success with continuing to raise unrestricted support from Good Ventures, but also from other donors. The attachment A goes through some of what we expect to be spending in the next 12 to 18 months, and what we expect our reserves to be, and what we expect revenues to be under different scenarios. Attachment B details where these funds came from. By and large, our our biggest gains came not from successful direct solicitation of major donors, but from new donors finding us and supporting our operations. I would guess, based on the fact that we had said publicly that this was something that we needed. So that this is something we talked about in brief at the last meeting, and I think this provides some of the additional detail. Just to quickly address Rob's question, and then happy to take questions. It's definitely something that people bring up, the question of whether we sometimes get the objection. You know, why are you fundraising for me when Good Ventures could clearly could ask Good Ventures for more, and then you wouldn't need to fundraise for me. Generally, the approach we've taken, and this is something we've written publicly in the post where we've announced the need for funding, is that we don't want to be overly dependent on Good Ventures. We want to be able to maintain we want to be able to give well, to not face some catastrophe if Good Ventures were to go away, and so that is what leads us to want to fundraise from the general public. I think there are some donors who take that argument to heart and end up supporting us. And there are others who say, like, I would rather not give to you. I'd rather give to your top charities because I would bet that, the relationship won't end. And if you run into a catastrophe, you'll be able to find money elsewhere. Thus far we've had, that has definitely come up with some major donors, but it hasn't been frequent enough that it's been a major obstacle to fundraising.
So just to comment on that response, it strikes me as a little defensive. I think that the point I would make, or as a donor that I see in that, is GiveWell's operations are an outstanding giving opportunity. The ability to give you guys more capacity to do more and deeper research on more giving opportunities is really valuable, and that's something that I value personally. And I think you as a prospect down the road may also value. So I think that's, I don't think there's anything wrong with what you said, but I think the positive side of it is very important as well.
Yeah, it just is. The question that the donor will have is like, well, hey, you could go raise. Why don't you go and ask? Clearly, Good Ventures is a major supporter, and if they felt it were the right thing to do, could provide additional funding.
Yeah,
and so then, I think what we're asking donors to do is help us not be solely reliant on Good Ventures, we're not close to solely reliant, but continue to help us have a more diversified funding base.
And
that has to be, I think, for like, especially for like our donors who are really thoughtful about like where the dollars are going. Now that is a huge value. I think that's something that's incredibly important, and that's why like I feel comfortable saying to donors, like, I think giving to us is like arguably the best thing that you can do right now with money, as we're trying to raise money. But I think trying to make the argument like, hey, it lets us do more research, they'll say, well, you could do that research whether that money comes from me or from Good Ventures.
Yeah,
has anyone ever said that?
What was that?
Has anyone actually ever said you could get this from Good Ventures?
Yeah,
I think that's probably the most common objection we get when we fundraise.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, definitely. And there's people who say, I can think of one guy who said, I would give you guys a lot of money if I felt like you needed it, and I don't, so I won't. And that happens.
And if they say that, I assume you don't argue much, or what's the response? It's maybe to rehearse what you just said, Ellie.
I told them I disagree.
We would do something different. We also don't argue too much. Part of this is these, some of these people are some of our, biggest fans, and what they're doing with their donations is give to our top charities. And I think it is true that if they felt that we were, when we talk about the question of what would we do in the event of a Good Ventures and GiveWell ending the relationship, I think that there would be these donors who would be very excited to step in and provide funding.
We try not to get into shouting matches with our donors, as a general rule.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I try.
Yeah, you try.
Not anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
It just seems to me to be a little bit of a stylized view of the world to say, we have this budget, and Good Ventures is this much of it, and, if I don't give, then, you'll get to your budget anyway. I mean, we've talked in the past about telling the story to donors, whether it's you guys telling the story or ideally somebody else telling the story of what's the value of a marginal dollar to, what's the impact of a marginal dollar to GiveWell, and I think that's a pretty interesting story. It hasn't really been told.
Yeah. Or to put it in a different direction here, I mean, accentuating the positive. Given the healthy state of the relationship between GiveWell and Good Ventures, the expectation of continuing collaboration in the future, is there a reason either for you, Holden or Ellie, or for you, Carrie, not to take the view that it would free up valuable staff time to relieve GiveWell from having to seek any major new donors to the operation of GiveWell, and just rely perhaps even more exclusively on Good Ventures operating support? Why not take that approach?
That has come up. We don't spend a ton of time fundraising right now. I think if we were like breaking our necks and not able to do our research, I think that would come up. But I think it is like good for people here not to feel like GiveWell really relies on one donor and would like fall apart and have a catastrophe if that donor went away. And I think that by making that case and by putting in like a modest amount of fundraising effort, we're able to put ourselves in a much more solid position. So that seems worth the trade-off. But I mean, it's sort of like, I mean,
a solid position in the sense of if Good Ventures goes away,
yeah,
a solid position.
Yeah.
And
you know, as with the Silicon Valley networking, it's one of these things that isn't currently the thing we spend the most time and thought on. And if it became something that either we had to take all our time or we had to be more reliant on Good Ventures, I think that would be a serious conversation. But in this case, it seems like we're able to get a lot of benefit just by, you know, making a basic attempt to reach out to people and make sure they understand where we are. And I think that does put us in a more stable position for the future. And I think it's a good thing to have a broad base of support.
And I also think it helps, I mean, maybe not because, you know, as you know, the folks at GiveWell are incredibly independently minded, but I think it helps GiveWell maintain both its appearance and sense of independence to not be overly reliant on us,
right,
and to be able to pursue, you know, the research agenda they want to pursue, and not the research agenda that Good Ventures wants them to pursue. I mean, I don't think we have that problem, but I think it's it's a psychological benefit.
The perception
of,
is the worry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, but that then just gets back to the spirit of the previous conversation, which is that if the perception of at least some donors is, look, you guys got Good Ventures backing you, why are you asking me for money? If the perception is what matters, then I think many people might well come to the conclusion that GiveWell is overly reliant. If you're not concerned about being perceived that way, and especially if in fact you feel like there would be many donors at the ready if the relationship between GiveWell and Good Ventures were to go south, then you should just you know, explain that the current relationship is mutually beneficial for all the reasons we all know, and then not wring your hands so much about finding a broader base of support, so long as you feel like there are other people who know and support what you do.
I mean, I think different people react differently. So, I mean, my personal opinion is that we should have a broad base of support, and we have multiple donors who feel the same way, and we make that case to them, and we end up with a broader base of support. Then we have some donors who think it doesn't matter. You know, I happen to disagree with them. They're there, and, you know, I think we're not designing the whole thing around what they think.
Right.
Another just comment on, I mean, Ellie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but my sense is, you know, your donor outreach is also about relationship building, and that you would be talking to a lot of these folks anyway. And so,
sure,
again, it's not like you're spending a ton of additional time that you wouldn't be spending getting to know your bigger donors anyway.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, we're putting some time into this because we think it's like worth the time we're putting in, and it you know, kind of comes down to what's the number we should request from Good Ventures? Is it 10%, 20%, you know, more? What's the amount of time we should put in? Is it, you know, nothing if we were to get all our funding from Good Ventures, or, you know, something more? I mean, it's certainly not the case that this is like a major time cost. It's probably on the order of a couple hours a week beyond what we would otherwise be doing.
Well, I mean, I think that I would hope that this is, you know, this isn't just sort of a year-to-year perspective. We're thinking about, like, you know, 5-10 years down the road, this is a much bigger organization with a much bigger budget, a much more diversified base of donors. You know, it's you know, doing an even better job of reaching the donors who are good fits and who appreciate what GiveWell does. I mean, this should, it should be sort of a, that should be part of the growth of the organization.
Yeah. That's right.
Hello?
So where were
yeah,
we?
We're all still here. Just
just looking at each other.
So this was the part of
the,
yeah, this was the part of the meeting we were going to discuss the any questions on the budget, our fundraising prospects. Well, we have to actually vote on the budget, but I think we should do that near the end of the meeting. So does anyone have any other questions about fundraising, budget, expenses, things like that? So these would be attachments A, B, and D.
I do. In attachment B, at the very end, it says there's an option for donors giving online to top charities to give 10% of their donation to support GiveWell's operating costs.
Uh-huh.
And I think I talked about this with both of you a couple times in the past. And just a quick question, will this be an opt-in or an opt-out?
So, yeah, I mean, this is... It's kind of a very common thing that online, I mean, groups that are kind of not themselves, that not directly fundraising for themselves, but fundraising for other organizations will put on. You know, Donors Choose has this, Kiva has this. When we do this, and we haven't rolled it out yet, it will be kind of the most GiveWell-y thing you could imagine. So it'll be like super opt-in, and I don't know how many people will end up taking us up on this option, because we're going to make it very explicit what they're doing, and they'll have to opt into it. You know, the reason we wanted to do this is the amount of money that we're moving from relatively small donations through our website have grown a lot over the last couple of years, and so, you know, this starts to become potentially a reasonably significant part of supporting our operations if, you know, some portion of those people give 10%.
Bridget, can I ask what you thought of that?
I think it's fantastic. I think I've been mentioning it for a while, and rightfully Holden and Ellie have said, you know, the donors to GiveWell are looking specifically for these recommendations and not for kind of a push to support operating. So it makes sense the way he's describing it just now, that it's very much opt-in. But I do very much agree with the idea that you give the donor the opportunity to do so, and perhaps you will be surprised that more people will be thoughtful about doing it than had you not asked.
One thing that's changed is just, like, when we estimate how much money we might raise by doing this, it used to be a really tiny number, and now it's a reasonably big number.
Right.
A lot of it's just like, is it worth it?
Right. And my personal fundraising philosophy is that it is as important to be building community and numbers of donors as it is just dollars, which I know isn't necessarily translatable here or in any situation, but I think it strengthens you for the long term.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I would ask, why not randomize the amount?
We might. We've been talking about experiments we can run on those donate pages.
What a Tim Ogden question. That is.
We're thinking of randomizing all the letters on our website.
If it's useful in thinking about how to design that, the current meta-analysis of these various experiments indicate that it doesn't matter very much. The higher numbers raise more from fewer people, raise the same from fewer people as lower numbers raise from more people.
Cool. We will take that into account.
Forget the experiments.
not nearly enough examples yet to draw conclusions.
I'm sure.
Experiments back on. Any other questions on these attachments before we move to the next? So this is really just if there's any questions, we'll have a chance to do this more. I know the next part we have to talk about is Holden's and my compensation, and that's part of the budget. So that's maybe we can also just move on to that, and then you know finish with any final questions on the budget that include like all the different components.
But this is Phil. I did want to have a discussion, I hope others do as well, sort of about the scope of the organization and the rate at which that would change and so on, and sort of tie that into a little bit to, you know, the numbers coming from different sources, web visits, money donated from small donors, big donors, and so on. Is that within the scope of what you want to discuss now, or is that for later?
No, that's good. Let's discuss that now.
Okay. So, I guess, you know, I was trying to look at this because one of the things I noticed is that the operating expenses, you know, for the budget as a whole have been going up pretty sharply. They went up pretty significantly from 2012 to 2013, and they're budgeted to go up pretty significantly from 2013 to 2014, significantly meaning, well, let's see here. There are different numbers because it kind of depended on the exact time that the month that one started. But given one of the numbers that said from July 2014 forward versus the same period a year previous, the budget was plus 70% dollar wise. And I was trying to put that in scale or scope compared to some of the other metrics of growth, because 70% in 1 year is quite a bit. The metrics for growth are kind of varied, let's put it that way. There's a lot of different ones. One of the more positive ones is the overall money moved, although a big chunk of that came in growth from Good Ventures itself, and there's sort of some questions about should we look at the combined money or kind of look at each individually, the money from Good Ventures, the total including Good Ventures money and the total including all others. The money, the first two quarters, which there's some updates on the website recently, showed dollars plus 48% on donors, which is mostly small donors, numbers plus 19%. The 2013 versus 2012 non-money moved, if you include Good Ventures, is plus 81%. If you don't, it's only plus 25%. And then the web traffic for 2014, for the first half, basically, of 2014, was actually down, if I read the numbers right, in the blog post, either one or two blog posts back, was down between 4 and 22%. So it's moving in the wrong direction. So it's just, I guess, you know, that's a lot of numbers I threw out there, and I apologize. Giving them verbally over the phone probably doesn't hard to visualize things a little bit. But I guess Holden and Ellie, My general question would be, you know, the budget has grown very quickly. How confident are we that that sort of matches well toward other measures of support, both over the last 12 months and over the next 12 months?
Yeah, I mean,
can I jump in real quick?
Sure.
Because one of the things I was looking at in terms of 2012, your main priority was staffing, and once again in 2013, your main priority was staffing, and a possible response still to you would be that they have achieved the goal of really bringing in many more research analysts and interns to be able to achieve the research that they're at. And so I wonder, Holden and Ellie, if you can sort of talk about Phil's question in the context of whether or not you feel like you've grown your staff in the way that you wanted to.
Sure. I mean, I think this is a really good question to raise. It's something that, you know, this question of how the budget growth compares to the growth in output and then in money moved to recommended organizations is something we've discussed a good deal over the last couple months. You know, I think the bottom line is that for a long time, our staff was very small and our budget was small relative to the amount of money that we were directing. And over the last couple of years, we've, you know, tried to, I think our staff size is starting to catch up with the amount of money that we're directing. And so I think that we've, you know, we've gone from a situation where the, you know, the staff size was very small. The budget relative to the overall money directed to one where I think it's more in line with what we would have expected is kind of a more reasonable, or it's not there yet, but a longer term, more reasonable ratio between expenses and money moved, which I think we've talked about in past meetings is, you know, roughly like 15%, 1.5 or so. You know, a lot of the new staff that's coming on is really focused on two things. You know, one is continue to expand out the research priorities of the Open Philanthropy Project. You know, that's something where Good Ventures has made some grants, but I think we're still, you know, we're in the process of building the research capacity for money that will be granted in the future. It's not, you know, the staff that we have right now is not, you know, tied directly to the grants we're making right now. It's intended to enable us to identify great opportunities for the future. And then on the, you know, the GiveWell Top Charity side, a lot of the staff that was previously working on our traditional work, you know, Holden and others included, have moved over to that Open Philanthropy side. And, you know, the staff that we've brought on is helping to, you know, both continue the work that we've done on our top charities, but also expand it in a way that I think we haven't been able to do for the last couple of years. So, I mean, I guess the quick answer, so those are some facts. I mean, I think the quick answer is, you know, I still think that there will be, you know, we're cognizant of the fact that growth is not as extreme as it had been, or as strong as it had been in the past, and that the staff size is starting to catch up. You know, I think on the Open Philanthropy side, the staff is still small relative to what the grants will be. And on the GiveWell traditional side, we might be moving closer to the, you know, a staff size that makes sense given the amount of research we need to do and the amount of money that we're directing. You know, Bridget, just to address what you asked, I think we've been really successful with hiring over the past, 18 months or so. We've brought in a lot of people who are contributing in all different aspects of the organization and the research process, but we're still in this situation where we have a lot of high priority work to do that we're not able to do at our current size, and so adding capacity is something where, you know, that remains a priority. So is that, Phil, I mean, I know I didn't answer your question directly with figures, but does that kind of address did that help answer your question?
A little bit. I'm curious what, let me ask one point. What do you sort of anticipate the level of growth, let's say, if you had to guess, you know, your yearly growth in terms of, let's say, user engagement type numbers, which would be web traffic, money moved, and so on, outside of the Good Ventures relationship, which is kind of a special case. Where do you anticipate those numbers going over the next 12 months?
I don't think I have a real good answer to that. I mean, I think
12 months, we have a pretty good idea, right?
I don't think we have a good idea. I mean, like, one challenge is understanding, like, where... So I think, like, one thing that has happened over the past year with our growth in money moved is that, you know, some donors who I think previously would have given to our top charities have given to us unrestricted as our budget has grown. And so that's money that probably would have gone to top charities otherwise. And then, you know, I think right now, our top charities are not... are kind of, like, particularly unexciting to many donors. You know, the Against Malaria Foundation hasn't worked out. A lot of people don't like GiveDirectly. Some people really do, but some people really don't like them. And then we have two deworming charities. And so I think these factors combined, or sort of the combination of started people giving more unrestricted as our budget has grown, and, you know, people waiting around for AMF or not liking our top charities and waiting for something new has led to, like, a small dip. And I think it's a little hard to predict how those things will play out. If I had to give, like, a very rough guess, I think we moved about, you know, $8 million ex Good Ventures last year. And my best guess would be that it would be somewhere in the ballpark of, like, $10 million this year.
And that's not including Good Ventures.
Yeah, that's not. That's ex Good Ventures.
And the budget that you're requesting, are all inclusive of the Good Ventures side of things. I'm sorry, of the not the Good Ventures, of the OPP project, right?
They're inclusive of OPP. They're not inclusive of the, like, special Good Ventures restricted grants that are the thing I mentioned before, where if we ended the partnership, those would be the first things to go. So they're not inclusive of those. They are inclusive, though. Like, they include, you know, my salary. I'm mostly open philanthropy partnership or open philanthropy project, and they include the salaries of the other people who are mostly working on that project. So, I mean, it's definitely, like, a big chunk of the cost is coming from that project. And, I mean, all of our staff contribute something to Open Philanthropy Project. You know, a lot of the staff do, like, general support-related stuff.
Carrie, do you think you'd be giving as much if you weren't working with GiveWell? Would you just be giving differently, or
giving as much overall?
Yeah.
It's really hard to say.
Yeah.
Because we've been working with GiveWell for so long and so closely that it's hard to imagine what our trajectory would have looked like otherwise. I mean, we sort of have like a, you know, kind of burned down model that we use to think about how much, like, at what rate we need to be giving over time in order to burn down our foundation during our lifetime. And I think we're, like, roughly on track and would have done roughly the same thing, but given differently.
Yep.
And possibly more slowly, because we would have spent more time, you know, building out our own staff, which would have been a challenge.
Yep. So, I mean, the way I think about the budget for whatever it's worth is, I see us as definitely being properly engaged in a very long-term plan and a very, like, long-term vision, and hoping to be, like, make a huge difference down the line. And so I was glad, like, I thought it was cool for a year or two when it's still the case, but I think it's cool when, for the moment, our kind of, you know, operating expenses are very small compared to our money moved. That's actually still true when you include Good Ventures. But I also think, you know, the main mentality I have is that whenever we see opportunities to expand our staff and expand our capacity, we want to take those pretty much as fast as we can, because we want to build the highest capacity organization we can while keeping the organization as good as we can keep it. And I think if we you know, it's not always the case that outreach and getting that money move number up are our priorities. If it ever became the case that there were, like, serious long-term doubts about our ability to have enough impact to justify our operating expenses, then I think I would want to revisit. But I also don't feel like we need to be, like, in that window on a year-to-year basis every year, although I guess we're still in it now. But that is how I think about it. It's not like I look every year at the, you know, at the money moved and multiplied by a constant and say that's how much we can spend, because I don't think that'd be a good way to build an organization. It's rather like we're trying to build this organization as quickly and effectively as we can, and we're asking, you know, do we still have the potential to justify all this expense? And I think the answer is yes.
What do you think of the money moved to operating expense ratio as a metric?
Well, that's what I was just talking about. Like, I think it's a good metric and a good target. I just don't, like, I don't think of it as something where it's like we have to fall in a certain range every year.
Yeah.
I think it's a good thing to, like, keep in mind and watch. And I think, like, right now things look fairly good because I don't know, we're in the, like, we've talked about how we think, you know, sort of 1/9 is a reasonable kind of just like a common sense, reasonable, accepted figure for how much you should be spending on overhead.
Right. Yeah, I know it's a murky relationship.
10% of the whole budget, 1/9 times money moved.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I know it's not like a direct cause or effect relationship, but as a donor, you know, if I'm donating a dollar and it's turning into, you know, $9 money moved, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right, so maybe we'll move on to the executive compensation. So this is attachment C, and so we'll come back to the budget to vote, I guess, at the end of the meeting. So we put together this, there's a document that, you know, lists the the comparables we found for Holden and me and our request for a raise from 110 to 130. One challenge of this is it's just very difficult to find reasonable comparables. We did the best that we could. This document sort of lays that out. We're happy to answer. Holden and I can stay and answer questions anyone has, and then we'll also step out. And I guess Natalie and Sean too, so we can have like a just board part of the meeting if people have things they want to discuss without us here. And then you'll need to vote on our salaries. So anything you want to ask while we're still here, or should we step out?
I'll make one general statement and potentially Pandora's box. But so my big issue on this topic is there are a lot of conventions in the philanthropy world, the philanthropy market, about how executives should be compensated that seem to me arbitrary, and they factor in spurious issues like, well, the executives chose to be in philanthropy, so they should expect to make a sacrifice. I don't know whether this is a good or good ventures worthy topic, but that seems really flawed to me, and it seems to me to be an obstacle to funds going to good causes. So as far as your specific analysis is concerned, I think it's fine. I also feel like it's a little arbitrary. It feels to me to be kind of low, but I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I'm inclined to sort of, if you're within 50% of the numbers here, I know I'm different from certain other board members on this, I'm fine with it.
So a couple comments from me. I mean, I think, I actually think we're a little on the low side. I think that's okay. I don't think we're like very on the low side. I think we're a little on the low side. I also like, I actually don't know that the norms in nonprofit are that bad. I kind of feel like when we've like done attempts to look both at the current and kind of like what a later career pay might look like in the nonprofit world, and like the actual numbers as they actually work, if you can like get the right numbers and figure out what people are really paying, look fairly reasonable to me. I think it's the stereotypes that are more broken. I think people have expectations that are unrealistic and that are not based on like the right information about what people make, and then people often get outraged by like pretty normal salaries. And so I actually like. My feeling is, I mean, I'm kind of interested in writing about this at some point, although it hasn't been a focus of this meeting, but just, like, laying out what the actual numbers are and saying, like, this is how it is, and actually these numbers are pretty justified and pretty reasonable, and, but, yeah. So I actually, like, my sense, and we may revisit this in the future, but my sense is that being compared to other nonprofit leaders is not going to leave us underpaid, but, like, conforming to stereotypes and, like, common wisdom of what nonprofit people should make would leave us underpaid, and that's kind of where I'm at.
All right, so I think we're going to step out, and we'll pause the recordings, and then, Carrie, can you come grab us?
Sure, and Natalie will drop off.
Before you kick us back out again, or...
No,
or
we...
Okay, good.
We voted in favor of the recommendation.
Oh, excellent. Yes. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. There's Natalie. She's back now.
So, Phil, do you want to repeat your comment for Holden and Ellie?
Sure. I guess my comment was, as far as having the executive compensation review, which is a good thing to have, I'm not crazy about having that. First of all, lead off with professors at Berkeley. It just seems like kind of a reach. I sort of get what you're going, but I think there are probably, the first point I'd look to say, what are the comparables, is to look at the comparables. And to me, the comparables, to a certain extent, are the group you listed here, these other social entrepreneur groups, Effective Philanthropy, Kiva, et cetera. And I'd like to see probably a little bit more detail, maybe the actual list next time that this subject comes up. But I'd also like to see, I'd be curious, Charity Navigator, the other charity, I think there was five listed in the recent blog post that Hewlett had funded, five different entities that are sort of roughly doing what you guys are doing, sort of internet evaluation of charities, and none of them are exactly comparable, but I guess that would be I'd like some data on that group at some point, maybe in cycle for this time next year.
I can note that down. don't have a problem with that.
And then the other note, I think it was a comment from Tim about how it's somewhat hard to do comparables for co-executive directors since there are two of you. So do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, the nonprofit compensation data we have is not just executive directors. Mm-hmm. It's like senior staff listed on 990s. So that would, I mean, basically what that means is that it includes, like, you would go to one of these organizations and you'd see, like, four or five staff members listed often.
I mean, that would be the thing that would be, more, like, next time when we get more detail, that would be helpful to just be like, there's this many at this organization, this many at that organization. I do remember looking at this, and my sense is that, like, yeah, the picture doesn't really change. Like, you can find two or three people at the organization who are making this much. It's not just, like, the head honcho. But it would be good if we could demonstrate that.
Got it. So your section, senior staff at Young Nonprofits, includes not just executive directors, but...
Right, and senior staff.
Right.
Just for what it's worth, I just looked up the 990 on Charity Navigator. Kenneth Berger in 2000, I think this is 2013, is at, where was it? 152, reportable compensation, column D. So that's actually above... what, hold on, Ellie. Although that's a single individual, I don't know exactly how their organization structured.
It's too late. We already voted.
Wait a second. We make less than Charity Navigator. Hang on. Hang on.
That's the 2012 form. I misspoke.
Yeah, if anyone wants to see the spreadsheet with all this data, I'm happy to share it with you.
Do people want that?
Well, why don't you just email Holden or me if you want to see the data we pulled for the various organizations and the academics. Cool. Any other questions, or should we move on?
I mean, just as a comment, like I think the professors are a good comparable. I mean, I don't know if that's an argument we need to have. I didn't mean to like imply that I took that point. I mean, I'm talking about what information we can provide next time, and I think I'm happy to note that down.
I mean,
for the record, I think professors are a good comparable just based on the difference between what you guys do and what the average nonprofit executive does.
I agree. I think it's an interesting comparable. I mean, you guys are thought leaders, you're researchers, I think it's, there is something sort of academic about that side of your job.
Yeah, I don't mean to say they're like a perfect comparable. I'm just saying, like, I think what you guys are saying, like, they're an interesting one. They're worth having. They're probably about as relevant as the other one.
But having both in your...
Sure, we have both.
Yeah, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. So the last... So we have, you know, about 20 minutes left on the call. We can have additional discussion of the budget and fundraising if anyone has any questions. We also have this other attachment, which is attachment F. And the reason we put this in the calendar year is because the board needs to vote to approve both our past budget, which was our 2013 calendar year budget, and then the projected budget for 2014. So if there's any questions, let me ask if there's any questions about, you know, voting to approve these budgets.
No questions for me.
All right, so then let's just vote again on these budgets.
Yeah. Tom votes in favor.
Carrie votes in favor.
If it's okay, I'm sorry, this is Bridget. I need to jump off crying children in the background. But I approve the budgets that you all sent through, and I'm sorry I can't stay through the end.
Thanks, Bridget.
Bye.
Thanks, Bridget.
So this is approving the budget through December 2014 that was in the attached exhibit?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, I approve. This is Phil.
Great.
I approve. This is Rob.
Approve, Tim.
Ellie approves.
Holden approves.
All right, that's everyone. Great. All right, well, that was the last item for this meeting. Any other questions before we... I think we forgot to call the meeting to order, but we could still...
Let's start all over again.
Wait, do we have a recording? I guess we should wrap... Does anyone have any other questions before we wrap up?
I had a quick... I'm sorry to prolong it. I did have a quick general question. Maybe one to go better offline at some point, but... As more content comes in, as the staff gets larger and more content comes in, I assume that will create greater output of text, of reports, of so on, you know, for the public and ultimately for the website. And I guess it's more sort of a comment that it seems to me worth thinking about the web design a little bit more. You know, if you double the amount of content on the website, it becomes a little cumbersome, I think, for users to find and engage with that content.
Yeah, I mean, that the thinking about website redesign is kind of a priority over the next 12 months. So, I mean, we agree with you both in terms of the new content, but also just in how long it's been since we did our last big, you know, website work, which was about 5 years ago. So that's something we're going to hopefully do over the next 12 months. Cool. Anything else on the phone?
This is Rob here. I have one question that was touched upon before, but I'm not sure I got exactly, Holden and Ellie, what you guys are thinking about this. It concerns the blog post from about a week or two ago that indicates declining web traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And possible explanations, cause for concern, not thinking about it at all. What do you think is happening?
I mean, my best guess is that it is a real reflection of some degree of slowing growth. It is like, I think it's important. It's something that we're like noticing and thinking about. It's also, you know, a couple data points, so we're not trying to overreact. I think that like we have this ongoing question of how we should allocate our time between research and outreach. So outreach being things that would, you know, increase money going to our top charities and web visits. You know, we still think that research is the place that we need to put most of our capacity. And so that's what we plan to continue doing. You know, these numbers don't change that fundamentally. You know, I think the work that I mentioned that we want to do on the website is what I would guess is like one of the best things we could do, or the highest ROI thing we could do to try to, you know, to try to improve things going forward. So, I mean, I think that's the basic situation. I mean, we had some really, so anyhow, I mean, that I think is the short story. So yeah, I mean, I guess okay. It's cause for you know, some concern, and definitely worth watching. I mean, it's why we put these things together, and we'll see where we, you know, end up, you know, six months from now.
Okay, sounds good. I mean, I'm curious to track that as well.
Anything else? All right, I guess we should wrap up.
Okay. Move to end the meeting. I forget the phrase.
that sounds pretty good.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everyone, on the phone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.